directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Never burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself.
Well, dear listeners, we are back after another unannounced hiatus. We're still here, so spread the word, and thank you to everyone who's stuck with us. We've been doing our best to keep those embers warm, and we have a number of episodes in the works for the next few months. On this episode, we're sharing a discussion I had with Lou Froese from Montreal's Pink Block. Check them out on Instagram or Facebook. We talked about the history of the Pink Block and its relaunch last year, the anatomy of the current transphobic far-right movement in Quebec, stories of drag defense actions in Montreal and Quebec City, and building a revolutionary anti-capitalist queer organization that can both participate in queer community self-defense and intervene in mainstream queer spaces against gay assimilationism. If you're in the Montreal area, they do have several events coming up in August, including a Radical Pride demonstration on Saturday, August 12th at 8 p.m., which is meeting at Metro Papineau. Check the show notes for more links, including to a related interview we did in summer of 2018. It's hard to believe now, but that was 5 years ago, with another Montreal anti-fascist about the history of the Quebec far right dating back to the 1930s. Here's our interview with Lou Froese.
I'm a trans feminine, non-binary activist. I'm pretty young, but I consider myself a long time anarchist and anti-fascist, and generally a revolutionary. I started mobilizing when I was 14 around anti-fascist and anti-capitalist stuff. And I'm one of the original members of the new Pink Block. And Pink Block itself is a radical queer collective that's openly anti-capitalist, anti-colonial, anti-authoritarian, anti-oppressive, feminist, and that believes in the revolutionary process of overthrowing capitalism and, yeah, the cisheteronormative patriarchy. The original Pink Bloc was a group started around 2011, 2012 that was involved in the 2012 student strike as kind of its queer wing and stayed active until around 2016. The group stopped existing, but some members kept in contact. And for the 10th year anniversary of the 2012 strike, an article was made around Pink Bloc and its activity, which led to a conference surrounding that article. And from there, people decided they wanted to revive a similar thing. And that happened in May of 2022. And that was the beginning of the new Pink Bloc.
Okay, and could you describe a bit about what Pink Bloc did during the student strike and what kinds of interventions were staged in that period?
I can explain some of it. I wasn't around during that time, but basically the original Pink Bloc was a different context. So a lot of what they did was doing Pink Blocs, which are a strategy that comes from the counter summit of the early 2000s, which was organize a queer contingent inside of protests that was flashy and very vocal and very noisy, and that took a lot of the attention of Black blocs and more confrontational tactics. They were also from within protests trying to fight the machist, homophobic, transphobic politic that was very dominant in even the most politically left groups. They would come and talk to people that were chanting chants with undertone that were sexist or homophobic, or they would overtake their chants with opposition. But they were also just mainly being very visibly queer and offering a queer space that was anti-capitalist and that was radical within that movement that wasn't very friendly to its queer comrades. And They also, the people that were in Pink Bloc were also close to the organization of the Radical Queer Semaine, so the Radical Queer Week. That was like a festival from 2008 to 2016. And so a lot of, there was a lot of tie between Pink Bloc and that festival. That was like a festival with like art and shows, but also like teach-ins and training and protests. And Pink Bloc also, the original Pink Bloc was also really opposed to gay assimilationism. And they had like political battles with a group called the Pink Square. That was a homo nationalist and bourgeois gay group that tried to like have more police in the village to push out homeless folks. And yeah, they're older. They were older gay men. They were like business owners from the village.
And then you said there was like a retrospective that was published that led to the new Pink Bloc. Was there something also about the political sort of climate that created the impetus to start the group again?
For sure. Like queer politics has an history of coming in the waves of like radical politics that get assimilated, a period of like assimilationist politics, and then a radical like opposition. And in Montreal, there was like a real shortage of revolutionary or radical queer political spaces that was needed, that was like felt. And in 2021, at the end of the year, the Quebec premier and his government tried to push a transphobic bill that was a reform of the family and parenthood, and that also covers gender transitions. And basically, like, the Supreme Court had forced them to add the X mention on papers as an option. And they tried to use that kind of imposition to go back on some of the winnings of the trans movement. Basically, they would have separated sex and gender on official documents. So what would have meant is, like, basically anybody that was trans would have been, like, highlighted to anyone seeing their papers, which for us felt like an attack. So in 2021, there was a big mobilization here from kind of grassroots politics. There was a lot of posturing, like graffiti all over the city. There was like a few small protests, a lot of like backdoor deal. And it kind of backed off. That struggle led to like a kind of revival of queer politics. And at the same time, a lot of the younger radical and revolutionary spaces in Montreal were becoming more queer, and in like student unions and other groups, more affinity groups or anything, the number of queer folks was growing rapidly. And for older people that were maybe not in like the original Pink Bloc, but active around that time or a bit afterwards, I think there was a tiredness of working with people outside of the community and dealing with a lot of like low-level homophobia or transphobia and wanting to like find a space to do political and revolutionary actions that was like queer-centered. In Montreal, it took a time before it arrived like in full force, but we felt like the global climate of like the rise of transphobia and homophobia.
And is that struggle against that identification law ongoing, or...?
It was a victory, like full victory. And now we have like some of the most like advanced laws. You can like have a paper, someone that confirms you have been using that name and gender for a year, go to like a free legal clinic. They check everything and it's done officially. But the rest of the system isn't following up. So it's harder to change your, like you can have your official mention change, but then having all your papers put to date is hard. And some governmental agency do not recognize the X mention.
And what would you say the Pink Bloc is focused on these days?
We're a kind of a pluriform collective. The first thing we did when we grouped back together was starting working on the festival to replace the Radical Queer Semaine. At the same time, we started doing some Pink Blocs in larger protests, like climate protests and the COP15 mobilization in the winter. That also led to other folks getting involved, more interested in like the street politics and groundwork and kind of mobilization and organizing. And then it's during spring that we really had like the beginning of an anti-trans, anti-drag mobilization in so-called Quebec province. The first big protest call was in St. Catherine, and Pink Bloc was one of the forces that mobilized first to oppose this backlash, and it and those fights took most of, if not all of, our attention until the last one in Quebec City, like last weekend, I think. But it's like we're winning hard and strong nowadays, so it's taking less and less time. And there's also like a bigger drag defense network in Quebec's province, and especially in Montreal, that's also like full of other groups and people that do a lot of the work. So we kind of aren't as busy with this. And right now we're organizing on the 5th of August, a revolutionary contingent in the Trans March, the like official Trans Pride March. That's kind of linked to the Quebec Pride Festival that's in August instead of June. But the Trans March has always been like the most politically advanced protest that like refused to be apolitical. And so we know like the organizers, and the original organizers were friends with the original Pink Bloc. And so we've been formally invited like to have a take space and bring our own brand of politics in that like march that's kind of pluripolitical, that's supposed to bring the whole trans community. And we are also going there ready if like anything happened with fascists and stuff, even though we don't think it's going to happen and we don't hope for it.
So across the province of Quebec, Pride Month is August?
Yeah, because like June is the anniversary of the Stonewall riots. But in Montreal in the 90s, there was a similar event where like queer, off the village, underground space that reunited a lot of the queer folks that didn't like recognize themselves in the white, gay, cis, kind of bourgeois and touristic village. There was a loft called the Sex Garage that got raided pretty violently by police, and they like beat the shit out of everybody. And so there was like that night, like people kind of fought with the cops, and then there was a series of protests. And that was on the 15th of July. Following that, there was like the first kind of event, was the first kind of Montreal Pride.
And just turning to this far right organizing in Quebec, I'm wondering if you could describe who the groups are that have been attempting to disrupt drag events, and if they're doing more than just drag events, and what kind of their lineage is, and whether it's separate from what we're seeing elsewhere in Canada.
I think like the main force, and that I think it's different than other places because Quebec has kind of its own weird political landscape. But we had like a really strong conspiracist movement in Quebec, like really, really strong. They had like huge protests during the COVID pandemics. They were close to the American QAnons, and they had like some religious elements, some nationalist elements, some other stuff. And they're dying off because of the end of the measures. But one of the like lead figure of that movement is a ultra Christian guy called François Malégueux. We like has a ton of like super weird beliefs, like CO2, like the increase of CO2 is good for life, and ecologists want to destroy life, and fully like out of this world believes about like everything is a conspiracy and everybody's watching me. But he's also like super religious, evangelical, and has like a deep hatred, like clearly a deep hatred of trans and gay people. And he got closer over the years with the religious far right in Quebec, mainly Novos TV, which is like an independent far right religious network. And François Malégueux has co-organized most of the anti-drag protests in Quebec. I think he openly said it was a crusade because he believes he's like the emissary of Jesus. And so backing him was like mostly the conspiracist network, a lot of Christian. There's a lot of like EPs in the conspiracy networks. And so there was like, there's some EPs that are just kind of, that look really confused and like believe anything they're said, and believe that like kids are being forced to take hormones and stuff. And then there was like some nationalists, a bit of like truckers and like people from the PPC, like the Maxime Bernier's party and the Quebec Conservatives. And there was also like quickly on at the first protest, and from there on like neo-Nazis, white supremacists, like the violent far right, like organized thugs. And the first protest at St. Catherine actually like ended up having some like having a brawl where like some people that were kind of maybe identified with the White Lives Matter movement and the like a new active club in the region got beat up by people there because they charged the crowd and and it didn't turn well for them. And like the most recent protest, Quebec, was organized by a 16-year-old neo-Nazi, like open neo-Nazi. He calls himself like a national socialist. And yeah. And so like that's been like the framework. There's also like in the conspiracy movement, there was a lot of former ultra-nationalists from La Meurthe that was very active in 2016-17. And at Sainte-Catherine, one of their old leader was there. And he even said like basically, he was surprised that they got beat up by fags, which in a live stream, which was funny. At their first protest, there were 150 of them, maybe, and they haven't been able to be more than like 30 ever since.
150 is that's more than I'd expect, given how fringe it sounds. Like this extreme leader you're talking about.
No, but the conspiracy, like, there was, like, 100,000 people protest at some point. No, maybe not 100,000, but, like, a few tens of thousands people conspiracy protest. So he had, as a, like, anti-vax, anti, like, COVID disbeliever kind of person, he had a large following. Didn't, like, translate one-to-one to anti-drag stuff. But, you know, he was able to carry on some people. And Lambert, too, back in the days, had a lot of members. And some of them transferred to conspirationist stuff and now to like anti-LGBT.
And are you seeing an element of so-called gender critical, like TERF groups participating in this stuff?
That's another thing. They're like here, the gender critical kind of TERFy are way more academic and they don't have like the main group would be PDF Québec, which is like pour le droit des femmes. So like for the rights of women. That split from the Quebec Feminist Federation, that when like the federation took a left, decisive left turn in favor of like helping and defending and sex workers and being trans exclusive and not being Islamophobic, PDF Quebec decided to split away from that. We believe that they were probably involved in pushing for the PL2 stuff. And they are trying to ask right now for a law like the one in New Brunswick. Yeah, basically any trans kid would be like outed to their parents. Them and like the traditional like Mathieu Bocoté and like Journal de Montréal and like TVA people have been pushing kind of the larger, more acceptable version of the anti-trans, anti-drag stuff, where they're not calling us like pedophiles, but they're talking about like the right to choose if your child is gonna see drag queens at their school, even though like all of the story hours are like in libraries anyway. Like one thing that makes it harder is like the neo-Nazis involved have been pretty thoroughly identified by Montreal anti-fascists, and it put the like more concerned citizens on a weird stance where they were siding with Nazis. And so there was a split recently. So maybe that there are, like, maybe now they're going to try to find other people than white supremacists to link with.
Yeah. So could you tell us a bit about what some of the tactics were that were deployed that were effective and some things if maybe that weren't effective and just how things have gone down?
Yeah. There was the first mobilization I was involved with was basically PinkBok, Montreal Anti-Fascists, and other activists and groups had a discussion because Christine Anderson, which is a German far-right politician, made a tour of Canada to fundraise and back the truckers. And she's like classic far-right Islamophobia, anti-migrant stuff, but also has become like super vocal about like trans stuff recently. And so we called for a protest outside the event to have it canceled. And so the venue canceled it and they had it like somewhere like far off in suburbia. And so the kind of original drag defense network built around that. We had like a few activists that were pretty solid and an internet presence. So we helped diffuse it a lot. And so we started being like kind of the only queer active group in anti-fascist stuff. So people started like looking toward us for this info. And so like, as it kept going on, those connection reactivated when it circulated that François Mélégaz was holding a protest on the South Shore against the drag story hour. So, and that first mobilization got in the news. There was like a bunch of tracking, and there was like a, and we kind of at first we, people didn't want to make a public call to oppose it because they were afraid of giving it visibility. And like the drag queen asked another group of drag queens that were organizing a like public kind of liberal protest to cancel their protest. Revolutionary forces that were mobilizing decided to have a public event since the other one wasn't called. Invite everybody to join us and have a presence and call it publicly and let it known that we would be there. And that, I think, was a victory. And that's like the main strategical thing we did that's not always active in like anti-fascist stuff is trusting like the public to swarm the numbers of the other side. And at St. Catherine, our numbers were matched because the public, because of all that canceling and call out, like we did our public call at the last minute. And we were a lot more organized than the other side, and we were able to trap them in a specific location. And tactically, we were able to block off the space, and we are ready for confrontation. And I think they didn't expect that, especially from like Pink Bloc. Like we are everywhere, dressed in black and pink with like pink banners, glitters, and like we kept the like show off and like kind of fabulous fashion of the old group. But we are way more anchored in like direct action and self-defense and stuff like that. And so I think they expected to walk over us, and like they got pushed around and shoved into a corner. Yeah. So that was kind of the victory. The drag story hour happened on another location. So none of the families or the drag queen ever saw their march. They had like the covers were that their march was a failure. That first one was scary because there was like very violent individuals and the numbers were kind of matched. But the next protest was called, they called it like 2 weeks, I think, before it happened in East Montreal, close to the like left-wing stronghold of Hochelaga. So the basically Pink Bloc officially took the leadership of calling the protest and was backed by MAF and other activists and a new group in Montreal called Première Ligne and like student associations and individual like member and affinity groups. And we called for a mass like mobilization there to like hold the space and like have it as a show of strength. And basically there was like maybe 300 people that showed up from our side, and we had like shared a lot of information. Quickly, we assumed like that we were taking the leadership on those kind of things because we were trans and queer, and like we didn't felt like we had to wait for the drag queen search arises to come, and we wanted people to be safe, and we didn't believe in like talking to fascists and talking to media and letting them film. So we distributed online a guide to drag defense that talked about all those things, and a guide on how to like create a like festive block, how to mask yourself in if you didn't want to be part of a black bloc, or to still like mask yourself and have a festive vibe and be queer and proud, but protect yourself, your identity, and that of your comrades. Because that was a problem in St. Catherine. People talk to fascists, people let themselves be filmed. There was like a bit of doxing, low danger doxing, but still. But we distributed it, and at St. Catherine, like there was 300 blocked people, basically. Like it was like kind of impressive how much like the mainly queer community that was there accepted like a tactic of like protecting your identity, forming lines, blocking the access of fascists, like blocking cameras with umbrellas, not like because Rebel News came to film and other stuff. But the presence of like the fascists were minimal. François Mélégaz apparently got mugged or beat up or something while leaving his house. So he came in late, made a live stream like whining. So basically like their mobilization kind of couldn't happen because like he's the central point around which they like circled. So maybe like the more people came and left, it's not clear, but they were like maybe like half a dozen to a dozen of them, which is like a like pitfall from the 150 they were before. Like we more than double the numbers. And so for us, it was like a clear victory. And then after that, there was a musician in Saguenay, which is a more far-right base in Quebec. And that was matched, was organized with, like, local forces, local queer activists and anti-fascists. There were more like 30 fascists and 50 people on our side, but there was like a huge police presence to make sure that no fight happened. So the two groups were kind of isolated from one another. And then there was Quebec City last weekend where there were 400 people, I think, that showed up. Yeah, I think like basically what allowed us to defeat them was we were already organized. Like we had for Pink Bloc, we had a group that had like a degree of a base that had like allies, that connection in both anarchists and communist and revolutionary spaces, but also in queer spaces, organism. The drag defense stuff like grew our number. Like the festival that we're organizing and the drag defense stuff all happened around spring, and our number like grew in really strong capacity. And as this thing happened, we had like an organized force that could be a point of coordination and diffusion. But also another thing I think that differentiated from elsewhere is like Montreal is like one of the queer capitals of the world. We have like the largest village in North America. It's like Montreal itself is not a good groundwork for that kind of campaigns because there's a really large queer community and it kind of got depoliticized last like 2 decades, but it's still there. And a lot of the younger folks like felt the attack very deeply. And we had like people writing to us, sending us every kind of info they could found, writing to us like how could they help, what could they do. If like people from other cities wrote to us that they wanted to like organize like car share to get down from like all across the province. So there was like a queer community that was ready to back us and get involved. And so we didn't have to deal with the lack of numbers or a liberal leadership that we had to like follow for legitimacy.
How have the relationships been with the drag performers themselves and the venues, like the libraries?
I think they don't like us. They accept that we exist and that we are part of the conversation. We had some communication backdoor stuff with Barbada, which was their producer. She wasn't happy we're there, but like she came to Tout le monde en parle, which is like the biggest talk show in Quebec, and talk about the stuff and just didn't mention the anti-fascists and the protesters on our side, which to us was a kind of victory. She didn't call us out. Pink Bloc sent made a communique that like circulated somewhat, which basically said that we were going to accept anyone's strategy in working in around those struggles, and that we respected like a diversity of tactic and how different members of our community were choosing to protect themselves and react, but that we didn't need the authorization of anyone to act. And we are a deeply trans group, and we felt that like we knew that the real battle was against trans people. And so there was also that thing where like drag people aren't in drag when they're not working, and we're trans all of the time. And so we didn't feel like the drag people were in a position to tell us what we could and couldn't do. And so there wasn't any public fight. And a lot of drag queens actually wrote to us to ask how they could help, to say they wanted to come. Some of them asked us if it would be safe to come to counter-protest in drag. A lot of like smaller drag queens were really happy with what we're doing. And we didn't really hear anything public. So I think we in the community, we had a space to act. And also, like, we didn't want to battle anyone in the community. Like, we generally opposed to, like, assimilationist, capitalist gays, like, bourgeois gay, like, business owners and stuff that make money off our community. In other contexts, we do mobilize against them. Like, right now, they're once again trying to have cops in the village to push out, like, our homeless siblings and stuff. But in that context, we accepted like that it was a difficult context and it was hard for drag queens that were targeted. And we understood like they didn't want to make it a political struggle, even though it was one, because it was their livelihood and they wanted like to ignore them if they could. And we like understood that, even though we didn't like follow their leadership. And so we didn't pick a fight either.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you think about attacks on pride as well, in terms of from the right, how that has shifted the context so much in terms of I was thinking of this article that was up posted on Three-Way Fight. I don't know if you've seen it, called Revolutionary Trans Politics and the Three-Way Fight. And it's sort of talking about this question of how to engage in drag defense and pride defense and things like that, and while continuing to push for revolutionary objectives and trying to also avoid becoming defenders of like a liberal status quo in those spaces. Is that something that your group has also sort of talked about internally and have ideas about how to kind of walk that line?
Yeah, it's like a deep part of our politics. And often, like, since we've been underground, people organizing like drag shows that are more like in community spaces and stuff ask us if we can do security. And we've been discussing like how to engage with more liberal space and stuff, because we are deeply involved in a revolutionary project and in capitalism. And we want to defend our community and we want to like protect spaces, but we also have a long-term goal of like eradicating the system that oppresses us. And so we kind of always refuse a half measure or like to silence ourselves. And so when we take space and we help around and we defend stuff, we do it like in a really openly anti-capitalist, openly revolutionary space. And another thing we did is like, as an organized group, take space and help in other struggles. We were part of environmentalist mobilization last fall and in the winter, and we are endorsing a protest in the 25th of August. There's a protest against a new bill from the Quebec PM, which is a bill that would like cut tenants' rights in the context of like a really intense housing crisis. And so we are like endorsing the protest and are like making link with a group organizing it and are hoping to get involved in that fight. And so like that's one of like, you're asking how to have that struggle. I think we cannot separate like the drag defense stuff and like the rise of anti-trans and anti-queer fascism from a global crisis in capitalism. And the solution isn't just to organize defense, it's to like fight the system and change the world, change the like capitalist society into a one that takes into account our needs and that protects us and yields us. And merging the two into like everyday activities is something that's pluriform. And I think like the Brûlants Festival also for us like was our way of like having a queer radical space that was like uniting folks and making connection and like decimating politics and ways of life outside of like struggles line, outside of the like front lines. And there was like, it was a big success. There was like more than 500 attendees. And so this also like, this was a diffusion of like our politics that means that we are able to build our own base of support and make connection with other groups that have similar politics or similar goals. That means that we don't have to always rely on the like institutionalized queer like community organism.
I mean, and I'm also hearing like that the engagement in drag defense and building a network around that has built your numbers as well and brought a lot of people into the fold too, which sounds really positive.
Yeah, everything we've done, like we kept having new activities, like the festival and then the drag defense, and they all been pretty efficient at like making people want to get involved. But drag defense has probably been the activity that have gained us the most, like, I'm going to sound like a Marxist, but the more like professional revolutionaries, the more like disciplined and ready to act people. It's not the thing that probably made us have the most like connection, but it gained us like really valuable individual. And it's definitely what made us the most well-known to the public and gain us like internet following and name recognition.
And where are you going to go from here? Like, what do you have? You mentioned the trans march in the 5th of August. Oh, and this other event on the 25th of August, you said as well.
Yeah, 25th. We're not organizing it. We're going to be there and we are endorsing and helping to share it around. And the 5th of August, we are holding basically a revolutionary block within the larger trans march to have like a defensive role, but mainly to push like our understanding that the trans struggle is deeply intertwined with like anti-colonialism, anti-racism, anti-state and anti-capitalist battles. And for and then on the 12th, it's kind of a scoop because we barely like put it out today. On the 12th of August, we're organizing a radical pride that's going to be an evening protest the day before the official like pride march. We want that to be like a really reuniting space, even though like it's in a month, but we're going to try to like bring as many folks in it as we can. And I think like something that reunites our community away from like the big march with like banks and cups and the whole thing, and something that's like says we are queer, we're here, but we're also like angry and we're like aware that there's a whole system that oppresses. And that's like our main event coming in, that like radical pride. It's something we've been working under the table for a while, and now it's gonna, yeah, it's happening. Maybe like it's in the it's like a close to the end of the Pride Festival, and we want to bring a bit of chaos to break the complacency of that festival, especially since it's like, to me it's important, especially because it's the anniversary of a police raid on an important queer space, and there's cops at the protests.
If somebody's listening to this and they're not in the queer capital of Montreal, and they want to get started in doing some kind of defense work, what advice would you have for how to get started?
We like, it's a thing we discussed a lot because people contacted us to do similar groups elsewhere. And to us, like having a space and a moment where people meet is the most important stuff. And starting from the base of unity of like being queer and being angry at the system and being opposed to oppression. Like we didn't start because of like a really thought out, like well-planned strategy. There was an event talking about queer politics. People came in and spontaneously decided to keep in touch. And so I think like, calling an event at a place, having people like receiving a list of stuff, of names, keeping in touch, having regular meetings, and starting with your ability and taking space. That's the main thing. Being at protest, doing posturing, getting involved where you can as an openly queer group, as an openly anti-capitalist group, being open about your politics, helping around where you can, and being public. That's the thing that like was missing a lot here. Public groups like that weren't like a secret affinity network, something that could like be followed around, like people could name, people could talk about, people could write to. That was a big deal.
I was just going to ask if you've also made any links with other groups internationally or across the country that have been beneficial as well.
We have like internet links with a lot of French groups because we share around our like material, like information material, and we like wrote to a few groups in the US. We met some queer folks from Chicago at the Anarchist Book Fair in Montreal, and they like there's like a big event in Chicago in September for like radical queer activists. So that's interesting. But we also like we made link inside of Quebec with queer activists and anti-fascist groups in Saguenay and Sherbrooke and Quebec. And we are aiming to organize an event in Gatineau because folks there, because of all the thing happening in Ottawa and because there's a lack of stuff happening in Gatineau politically, they want to like have a ping block Gatineau. And so we are in contact with folks there and we are hoping to organize an event there to like, so people can come in and like get involved and get in touch and start working from there. And we hope to like help them. But we are hoping to like build more of a network internationally. And we've been very busy on like ground stuff, but we're hoping like that we'll be able to connect with like the Bashback heirs in the US and French groups that are fighting like their similar race there. Cause our like Quebec position makes us like basically our friends are like Canada, United States, and France for some reason.
Well, I mean, you all sound very busy, but I'm very inspired to hear all the things that you're working on. It sounds like really worthwhile stuff, and it's nice to hear of some public organizing. I agree that it's been a little bit lacking in recent years, and I think it's a really positive development.
Yeah, and if like anyone's interested in like coming to any of the event we named and coming to talk to us or like writing to us to, on Instagram or by email from like Ontario, BCs, whatever, like we're super down to make connections.
Well, that's it for our comeback episode of From Embers. Thank you for listening, and thanks to Lou Froese for chatting with us. We're going to post a bunch of links in our show notes, but to find Pink Block online, just search for them on Instagram or Facebook. Feedback and episode ideas are always welcome, so email us at fromembers@riseup.net or find us on Mastodon at fromembers. We'll be back in August with more discussion about anarchist ideas in practice across so-called Canada.
Friendly neighborhood anarchist.
More of an anarchist militant.
People involved in social struggles than everybody else.
People have been waiting for some content.
Radio and show.
The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Percy Goodness.
The Final Straw Radio. Noblogs.org.
If you're listening, you are the resistance.
Time.
C is for
cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K for
kitten.
Cam.
C, wait. Fianro. C. U, unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
The most violent element in society is ignorance. Born in 1869 in the Jewish quarter of Kovno, Lithuania, Emma Goldman emigrated to the United States at the age of 16 in the hopes of escaping a traditional domestic life in which her only use, in her father's opinion, would be to cook and produce many children for her man. Once in New York, where she worked in the garment industry, she was inspired to adopt a life of activism after witnessing the 1887 Haymarket Square riot, which led to the execution of falsely accused anarchists. She then began her career as an anarchist speaker and activist. Addressing crowds in either Yiddish, German, or English, she was a fiery and captivating orator who was not afraid of tackling such controversial issues as sexual freedom and contraception. She published her own anarchist journal, Mother Earth, from 1906 to 1917, Unimpressed by the women's suffrage movement, Goldman wrote, "Corruption in politics has nothing to do with the morals or the laxity of morals of various political personalities. Its cause is altogether a material one. Politics is the reflex of the business and industrial world. There is no hope that woman, with her right to vote, will ever purify politics." She was sentenced to a year in prison in 1893 for one of her speeches and was deported back to Russia in 1919 for being an undesirable immigrant radical. Unable to live with the restrictions on political expression and the anti-Semitism of Bolshevik Russia, Goldman spent the rest of her life in exile in Europe and Canada. Emma Goldman died in Toronto in May of 1940.
Don't miss Jungle, live at Place Belle, September 23rd. Grab your tickets now to see the duo's acclaimed full band live show. Jungle at Place Belle. Tickets on sale at evenko.ca. Jungle. New album Volcano out now. For more information, visit junglejunglejungle.com.
Vengan todos. Get set to meet the city's most eccentric Colombian family starting on September 19th. Discover Providencia, an extravagant and spicy comedy in which laughter, music, and the unexpected come together at an eventful family reunion. Presented at the Teatro Zicuri near the Fabre metro station. Information and tickets available online.
Back to tough bond, told I'm having flashbacks of us. No clothes with the sex and the weed combo. I need to see you, girl, pronto. Come back to tough bond, told I'm having flashbacks of us. No clothes with the sex and the weed combo.
Bonjour, Montreal. What's going on? It's the R&B Trailblazer K-Force, and I'm just letting you know you can listen to my new song, Thug Passion, from my brand new album, Pray for a Beautiful Sky, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. And you can go get that on Spotify, Apple Music, and Tidal, man. Let's go. Fway out, baby.
directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.